CliffCentral.com.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Stretch and yawn. It's one of those mornings. You got to stretch a little bit. You remember that when they used to do the TV aerobics in the morning? It'd make everybody.
Oh yes.
Remember that. All I want you to do this morning is stretch.
And really, all it was a legal way to get leotards onto apartheid TV.
Exactly. Correct.
Oh wow.
Because the apartheid government was so stupid that if you sold them a bill of goods, they'd usually just, yeah, that sounds all right. Yeah, it's just to keep people fit and healthy. Yeah, we'll put that on. And then, like,
Nothing to do with my love of leotards at all.
No, and then there'd be a whole lot of men in South Africa who'd go, oh, it's all these hot people and you know, these girls in these leotards. And leotards are not sexy by any estimation, but... You know, in those days, it was slim pickings.
Shrink wrap for a human.
But there were slim pickings because, you know, you couldn't even get... There were magazines with, like, semi-naked girls in them, but they always had stars on all the important parts. So you never really got to see. It was called Scope magazine.
They didn't have stars on their brains, Gareth, so it wasn't all the important parts.
Yeah, okay, so most of the important parts. Quite right. Correct. All right. Good point, well put. I'm not going to argue with you.
So, did we ever have a South African version of like Playboy? Was Scope that?
Yeah,
was it like a local?
No, we had all those local things as well. That shit was banned outright, right? There was no Playboy. Were never going to be allowed to launch in South Africa, so we Scope was like a local alternative.
Yeah,
it was later that like Playboy and Penthouse launched here, and then all of the others that followed. I know like Hustler had a very big South African edition.
Yes,
like,
but it was nine years ago, South but African, I know it was a big thing.
No,
so would there be South African people in there?
No.
Very few.
Hang on, before 1994, Gord. There were none of those magazines. There was only Scope, and Scope was on the top shelf.
Scope was the OG.
It was on the top shelf of certain shops that sold magazines, and it was in plastic, and if you managed to buy one, you had to be over, I think, 18 or 21 to get one.
18, yeah.
And then
one or the other.
Inside they had these girls from overseas. There might have sometimes been, because I know there was a local guy who was trying to publish it, might have sometimes been local girls in it, but they would always have, like, there would be big black stars, five-pointed stars, over the nipples and over the lower genital area. So you'd just get...
And it was...
You'd get, like, a hint. You wouldn't get the whole picture, right?
They also, like, as I recall, and I mean, these were, like, out when... By the time I was old enough to read these things, they'd gone global mainstream smut. But like, what I do remember from Scope is that it was always like oddly themed, like a lot of cowboy themed shoots. Like,
yes.
It was very weird that in every magazine, there was at least one lady dressed up like a cowboy or cowgirl.
That's right.
And then like stars over the nipples. I was always like, what is the fascination with Western culture?
Yes.
That was kind of a thing then.
Listen, people were so desperate for anything that was vaguely sexy. I mean, you know, we were, you've got to remember that government, and, you know, there's a lot that's become almost apocryphal. People look back and they've got very few good things to say about them because they really were awful, awful people. They were like fascists, really, and they didn't like you to have fun, almost puritanical as well.
They're also one of the worst fascists in terms of fashion. Like, other fascists have often had a keen eye for fashion. I'm serious. You've got to get people on board.
Right.
You want to brainwash the masses. You want to look cool, even if you're very evil, so that people can be like, yeah, shit, I want that, like, badass Lagerfeld uniform. Mm. They just made everything brown and khaki. Like, of all evil regimes, they're up there with the evilest, but I think that they clearly take the cake on the ugliest evil regime in history.
Definitely.
And I don't mean... Like, ethnically, what people look like. I mean, the way that they build gray buildings and khaki everything and face brick and brown wood everywhere. Everything looks like a school hall from 1960.
And And the school hall is exactly the kind of room that they loved. They loved a room that was like, you know, really authoritarian. And I remember the best example of that brutalist architecture. And remember, this is the same kind of architecture that appealed to the communists in Eastern Europe. It's this very hard concrete. They liked undecorated, and if it was decorated, it had to be decorated in an extremely modern and ugly and unattractive way. It was really hideous. And these guys thought this was so great. Most of the buildings built during apartheid, those apartment blocks and things, were so ugly. They were just revolting. And really, I mean, fashion was bad. That was bad. Television, the shows on TV were terrible because you couldn't, God forbid they should put on a show that was actually entertaining. And especially if you were unfortunate enough, because on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, they'd do shows in English on TV. And on Tuesday and Thursday, they'd do shows in Afrikaans. So even if you didn't like the English shows, you had to watch them. And if you were Afrikaans, that was too bad for you. If you were English, you didn't want to watch TV on a Tuesday and Thursday because it was all in Afrikaans. It was dubbed really bad.
But you could simulcast some shit. Like, I used to watch Beverly Hills 90210.
Yes.
And, like, I remember it was one of the first, not strategic consciously, but it was one of the first things I started doing because, like, of girls. Like, all the girls at school, I was in standard four, so class six, and standard five, class seven. And so all that was like, now you're making friends with the girls, and you're getting crushes on them, and your friends have got, everyone's got boyfriends and girlfriends, and the girls in the school all loved Beverly Hills 90210, so the dudes started watching it, and then we loved it too. And then you were watching it for your own
coincidentally.
But you had to tune in to Radio 2000, and Radio 2000. And you had to tune into that shit. So you're watching TV that is an English-speaking program. Afrikaans is coming out of the TV. You've turned the TV right down, and you're listening to the radio. And it's not like it's not a problem that it's out of sync, but it's always just a little bit out of sync.
A little bit, yeah. Mm. Well, I mean, listen, that Beverly Hills 90210 was kind of the only show that mildly appealed to anyone under the age of 25 in South Africa at that stage. The rest were like much older. There was like, you know, Achter Elke Man.
Twin Peaks. Achter Elke Man was a vibe. Network was the like the post news analysis. Network.
I don't remember that.
No, that was a bad show. A completely different world.
Yes, yes. This is the point: is that it was really horrible in many ways, even for people who, you know, weren't into politics and didn't know what was going on in the bigger picture. I'm talking about just for kids,
teenagers. You know what has been lost out though, and it's not in any way attached to the politics. This is just an innocent bystander that died with that era that should have lived, and that's the advertising jingle, like. I love advertising jingles, and if I'd have been working in advertising in the day of the jingle, I would have been like a world champion, because it's so much fun to write little crap, like, in between class and in between play, Nestle cheese spread makes my day. Like, they don't have that anymore, and it's sad. So you used to sing a song for every product.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
Like, think of some of the jingles that you will never forget, no matter how hard you try.
You got that earworm.
Forever, for the rest of your life.
You just reminded me of that one, but I'm trying to think of some others.
Oh, boy, Mum remembered Melrose.
That was a
good
one. I wonder, because there's so many that you'll kick yourself as soon as you think of any, because now you try to think of them, you're like, oh, shit, I can't think of any. But let's ask the listeners in the comments, jingles from your childhood or early adulthood that you cannot forget, no matter how hard you try. Also, Tracy Bard points out that there was an Afrikaans version of Scope in the early 2000s. Can't remember the name. I think the editor was a woman. And Auxy Head has replied, that was Loslaif.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and I always wondered, like, what does Loslaif mean? Because I'm second language, like, loose body or leave the, like, loss as in leave.
Loss as in she's a Loslaif. She's loose.
She's easy.
Yeah, she's easy.
Loose.
Yeah, I couldn't. I was like, Loslaif, like,
here's
body.
A good one. Do you remember this? It's good and clean and fresh, tra-la-la. Do you remember that one?
So many great ones.
Lorel. The City Golf ad, there was a City Golf ad, they had red, yellow, blue City Golf.
Red, yellow, blue, not green, red, yellow, blue.
That's right.
Doobie, doobie, doo, this one's for you. Red, yellow, blue, red, yellow, blue. J and Seymour, set two is something new. Spray it on wet right air, and your star will stay there. J and Seymour, set two is something
yeah.
All you had to do to make an ad was just come up with an annoyingly catchy song.
Here's a good one. I want.
Oh yes, I want to be a Simba Chippy.
Oh, camphor cream, hands, hands, heels, knees, and elbows.
La 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 la. And they had like Napoleon.
Levin, I know the remake as of a few years ago, which was Ingram's protects heels and elbows. That's all I know.
Ingram's, they protect everybody. And they're
I remember
all kinds of tunes.
There's one that Jane.
I want to be a Simba Chippy.
Hold on, go. There's one that that Jane reminded me of 7 years ago, which was the sugar one. How did it go again?
I love
Shubadoo.
Yes.
Shubadoo. Nature gives us energy.
Yes.
I love. Yeah, there was a drum and bass. There was a young drum and bass act that I was friends with that used to play at a lot of gigs that we would play at. And they had like a little song that was like energy. Energy. Uh-huh. They made like a drum and bass tune out of I Love Sugar, and it was cheesy, but the crowd loved it, and it was fun.
Isn't this what we were made to believe? What's his character's name? I think his character name was Charlie Sheen's character in Two and a Half Men. Isn't this what he did?
Mm.
And somehow he made oodles of money and just sat at home?
You could.
Yeah.
Listen, if you wrote one of those jingles that we just mentioned now, and it was really catchy and it worked beautifully, what would happen is they'd use it for a local product and then they'd even use it internationally. And you'd get every time it played, because this is the old days of royalties, every time it played, you would get paid. So you could earn, even if it was, you know, in the old days, like 20 cents a play, you could over a
course. That would be a lot now.
Huge amount of money. So over the course of like a year or two, that you could live on that. And
you mean as the voice artist?
No, as the writer, because the composer's always got the most money. Even in music, composers always get the most money.
Nowadays, the industry is structured so that the writer gets, not necessarily the least, but like a very, you just get your crap salary and you write world-beating jingles that no one ever forgets. Your boss goes, well done, now you have to do two more. Like the idea of having an ongoing investment in a piece of creative work you made is something that the creative industries in the world are horribly lacking. There's no incentive. You make the best, most beautiful thing you've ever made. They say, well done, give you your salary.
Yeah.
Maybe a year later, if in your spare time you spend ages making an entry video, you might get an award, which the company will keep and put on their mantelpiece. Now, I get it. We're all part of a company. It's a team effort, whatever. But that idea of like, if you make something brilliant, you keep getting just a tiny bit of something for as long as it's used is like, oh, that's a novel idea. I'm not saying give the artist 100%, but maybe 1%.
You're right, though, that kind of creative process isn't rewarded the way that it used to be. But then that's true for the music business as well today. I mean, you know, if you buy someone's song on Spotify or Apple Music, they get like a cent. It's ridiculous. They can never live on that. The only artists who've made money on that, even the ones who sell millions and millions of those, they'll never make enough to live. You have to do the performances and merchandising. But here's another good one. You have an uncle in the furniture business?
Oh, yeah. Joshua. Everybody's Dore. That's always what I – that's like Joshua Dore is my like – The character, the mascot, is like my go-to archetype for a middle-aged white guy.
Yeah.
When I'm like describing a boardroom full of Joshua Dore-ics, like, okay, guys, we gotta go present work to a room full of Joshua Dore-ics. Prepare to spend 70% of this using marketing buzzwords that mean nothing to lube them up into listening to us. Okay, we know and understand the following words from 1996. ROI, synergy, leverage the golden thread. And I'm gonna say all of those. Check this, right, guys. We're just going to say the following 100 words so that you guys can take us seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the artwork. Bye.
The Joshua Dawes.
Do you remember VW and me, we all believe in quality.
We all believe in equality.
Oh.
Yeah, I remember I didn't remember the words to that. And I got like embroiled in a racial scandal because I just didn't know what it meant. And no, seriously, I was like six. I didn't know what it meant. And I thought the words were VW and me, we all believe in quality. So like make stuff well. So I was like changing the words to songs like I always do. And I went around the school singing, we don't believe in quality. And then I go back to the teachers and I was teaching the kids to sing, we don't believe in equality.
I've got one.
And I then got explained what equality was. And I was like, the song is about quality and I'm just making a joke. And then I was like, oh shit, that's a political error.
There was one for pick and pay, which my friend Nicholas and I perverted. We changed it from pick and pay hypermarket, blow your nose on the carpet, it's a great place to keep your snot.
Yeah, everybody, that one was nationwide. Kids of our age or thereabouts, that was the Cremora ad, it's not inside, it's on top. Not really a jingle, but a classic line.
How about zap it in the ZB bin to prevent us from littering?
Zap it in the ZB can.
That's right.
And there was never a ZB anywhere. Like, there were like four in Joburg and two in Cape Town, and you're supposed to hold your garbage until you saw the cool bin. Do you remember those garages with a giant zebra outside?
Yeah.
I used to drive past them as a kid, and I'd be like, why don't we go to the zebra place? Like, it made no sense. We just drove straight past it. Like, we get petrol. Why do we get it from anywhere other than the zebra place? They've got a zebra.
I remember those zebra. Why is it that things like that fascinate you as a child? As a kid, you're just so you're amazed. You're enraptured by something like a zebra in a garage.
It's like a life-size toy, and it's the size of a zebra, and totally novel.
Was it the Total garages that had the zebra? I can't remember which ones.
I really don't know. I want to say Caltex or Total because they've got a similar color scheme. But I really don't know. I don't even know if it's a garage that's still around.
No, it was Trek, according to Zinaid. Zinaid says it was Trek.
What is that?
I'll take Zinaid's word for it because I remember it was something that might not be around still.
Sia's listening to all of this, looking at us, and he doesn't even know. He has no reference point at all.
Somebody posted a meme that I saw on social media in the last few days that said, like, it was worded a bit more succinctly, but it basically said, when people talk about the 90s now, it's as long ago as the 60s was when people talked about them in the 90s.
Yeah.
So that just blew my mind. I'm like, when I was a kid in the 90s, I was born in the early 80s, but I was like a teenager in the 90s, and people spoke about the 60s. I thought it was like 500 years ago. Like, just, it was barely archived in terms of video footage. It might as well have been the 1800s. And now I can just imagine, like, Sia's listening to us talk about the 90s and 80s, and it's like listening to parents talk about 100 years ago.
Yeah, it's like 20 plus net or completely 30 years ago.
Are 80s and 90s.
In all that you guys are mentioning, I'm trying to even see if anything has been referenced at home. Have they said anything here? Have my parents mentioned these things? No, Trek does not sound familiar.
Do you have any ads that are like classics from your childhood that you either can't forget or wish you could forget? Like, what are some classic old school ads and brands to you? You're going to say,
I'm thinking about Scott's Emulsion. I don't even know
Scott's
what made it.
Scott's Emulsion. I like you.
I like you. You help me to grow.
I don't know what it was, but
I don't remember that. That's great.
Yeah, I remember that.
I like you. Okay. You help me to grow.
Help me.
It was a full-on song. Clothes are too tight, not too tight, and now they don't fit me at all. Why? Tables and chairs seem so small. Can't play with them anymore.
That's the one. And do you remember the
growing
this is from growing up.
And growing up.
This is definitely before Sia's time, but I used to get so freaked out by this. There was a dude who, like, his body sort of disappeared in parts. At first he was just hands, and it was like, you want nails that ain't too thin. You want a certain thing in your face and a healthy glowing skin. And it was about some like multivitamin, and the dude was like,
Jesus.
Go invisible. It freaked me right out.
Oh.
Unbelievable. I just...
That shit can haunt you.
But you know what's so weird, Gord and Sia, is that this stuff... Like, sometimes you remember it like yesterday, and you can remember the words to some stupid jingle. And then other stuff, like the important stuff that you should be remembering, you don't recall a damn thing. It's so weird how memory works. And you know that they've done innumerable research surveys into how memory actually works. And there's a very interesting one that I read about tangentially years ago, where they said that people can be in a situation, even a really traumatic one, where your senses are heightened, you know, you can hear everything, see everything, smell everything, taste everything in that moment. But over time, your memory starts to become more of a narrative than an actual recollection. So you start...
100%.
You have a story in your head, and you actually can't remember the details of it. I mean, they've tested this on people in court, for example. You know, if an accident happened a year ago, there's a certain set of facts, which is why they make you write an affidavit and get the police to stamp it, because that's your most recent memory of it. A year later, they'll test it again, and you've left out or changed completely the details of that story.
They'll ask you, like, did it come from the right or the left? And you'll be like, I'm not sure. Or you'll just say right, but you wrote left a year ago.
Correct. And then, you know...
You interpolate the details you don't remember each time. So you've got basic plot points, and those basic plot points become fewer and more important. So
Up to 5 years ago, it starts to bear very, very little resemblance to the truth. And it's just so odd how our minds can keep certain memories in perfect order, and you can remember exactly how to sing the lyrics to a certain song that you might not have heard in 20 years. But you cannot remember whether your gate opened to the left or right at home. You can't remember, you know, whether your mom used to wear mostly blue or mostly orange or mostly pink or whatever it might have been. You can't remember any of those things. If you were asked on pain of death to recall your home phone number when you were at primary school.
803-8174.
See, you could probably do it.
You're in the minority.
It's just a geographical thing, I think. But the thing with the jingles is that you can't forget them. So as a form of advertising, they're so effective. But I remember there was a transitional phase where they sort of died out, like they weren't hip anymore. And those people who were doing them were trying to do them as like popular music. They were trying to make it sound like what the kids are into. Mm. You've got to just make it a nursery rhyme. Don't try and sound like, you know, WAP. Don't do a WAP song for Simba Chippies. Make it like a nursery rhyme. Chippies are fun. Chippies are nice. Don't worry if you get fat and die. Just have another pack of delicious chippies. But they'll be like, yo, chippies, man. And you're just like, okay, shoot yourself. There was a peanut butter ad with a little kid that did this rap, and I hated it so much. Like, in my mind, this poor kid probably just got paid a bunch of money and he could rap a little bit, and it was like fun to do an advert for a day. But he was my enemy through childhood. Like, I wanted to destroy him. But you were talking about, you know, things becoming a story as opposed to a list of facts. Like, being right is what's most important to most people. So you've got a story, and in it you're right, and you'll fight to the death about the story, because in the story you're right. It's not the details that matter. It's your position in the outcome.
I mean, Lanice is saying pretty much what you've said now. When she had to teach her kids phone numbers when they were very small, that she would sing it to them, and that's how they remembered the phone numbers. And you know, I suppose...
I still remember numbers like that.
I remember studying for exams in matric, because before matric I didn't even put in any effort to study. I'd go in with whatever was in my head, and I'd fortunately in most cases I would have passed. But in matric, in order to learn, I used to make these notes, and there were these people who were convinced that if you drew like a what did they call it? A brain map or something?
A mind
map. Mind map, that's it. And then you
like a spider diagram.
Right. And I hated those things. I'd prefer to just write it out in actual handwritten notes that would just be points, you know, and I still do that now.
Yeah, if you like rewrote it from the notes, it somehow stuck in your brain, the process of writing it again.
Well, I mean, it did. For me, it made it made it stick a little bit more.
Yeah.
But if you ask me about anything that we learned in matric, I doubt very much I'd be able to give you any content. Even though I studied that, I spent a quite important part of my life memorizing stuff for matric. I think we discussed this the other day, those equations that you had to know for science.
Yeah.
I don't remember them easily. And in fact, when I recited one the other day, I got it wrong. So it just shows you.
I still think, though, that if you could dedicate a year with no income worries or minimal income worries, I know a lot of kids have all kinds of income worries, but if you could replicate your own privileged situation and have a year to learn those six or seven subjects and write a test at the end, I don't believe, with a possible exception of advanced maths, because that's either in you or it's not, and for other people also art, because it's in you or not, but with the exception of those two, I don't believe there's anything I couldn't get 97 or higher for if I had the whole year to learn for six tests. I think you could read a matric textbook and read it. I think you could read a matric textbook two or three times and then kind of know it off by heart.
Well, I don't know.
Not off by heart, like you can completely recite it, but enough to write a test on it. Like if you read matric history three times from beginning to end, you don't think you could pass the test on it?
No, I could do that.
Read it five times, you could get an A.
But yeah, it's just, as you say, math's a different story, particularly like
art's a different story, music.
Do you remember anything about trigonometry or calculus or do you remember doing those algebraic equations? I mean, if I gave you one
tan
of those.
Tan your hide cause x-rays, shade your rear cause x-rays will tan your hide. That was the combination of tan, sec, cosec. That was how you remembered all the different sine and cosine.
If I asked you to solve an equation now in algebra, do you think you could do it?
Yeah, if it was like a x plus y equals 2 minus 1 equals negative 7, like if it's a swapping things from each side of the equal sign, up to a certain point I could do it because I understand the rules and the steps. But don't ask me if I have to remember a formula or like remember the tan and the cot and the cosec and that shit. I don't remember any of that shit. So if you're still in the land of x, y's, squared, square roots, pluses and minuses, like I can bodmas the shit out of things if you give me enough time to think and do it.
Okay.
Because algebra is beautiful. Algebra works.
Sia just shakes his head. You couldn't remember to do that stuff anymore, Sia.
No. And here's something I picked up over the past couple of days, what I think a lot of us have tended to overlook, except maybe parents or people with young people in their lives. I was looking over what my nephew was doing at school and trying to explain to him, you know, things about sums, for example. But there are things that we now have so embedded in us naturally that it's so difficult to break down as simplistic for them at that level. Because now we just know it's like, oh yeah, anything you take any figure away from 100, you get this. But for them, you have to like further break it down and you have to explain how many tens there are in 100. Oh, no, it's just like too much.
That's a 10, though. That's an easy one.
Kids learn a lot of different stuff. It's too long.
Martel says,
school basically needs to leave you with general knowledge.
He says, can you still do long division? I can't do that, eh?
Basic long division, like as soon as it gets like more than like two digits into three, no. I remember the principle of it. I can still draw the thing and carry the two.
Oh, let's hand out a fine. Yeah. Sharon is late this morning. She overslept. So, Sharon, this is unacceptable.
Sharon.
You know, Sharon, this is so embarrassing. Now. We
don't ask you for much and we depend on you.
Well, the funny thing is, Sharon, if you haven't discovered it yet, there's this great thing called podcasts, and you can listen whenever you like. You can wake up at 9:30 if you like, and we'll be there for you.
We don't even need to do the show at this time. You could listen to us anytime. Like us, you have to start at 6. I'm just kidding. Sharon, I don't blame you. I hope you slept well.
Captain Barrett is breaking a cardinal rule this morning, and therefore we're going to ban Captain Barrett from the show forever. Asking me to give his partner and soon-to-be wife, Hein Boompies, if that's really your wife's name, I'm very, very concerned about who you're marrying. Happy birthday. No, we don't do happy birthdays, and we don't do shout-outs, and we don't do these personal
requests. Captain Barrett didn't know, Captain, and it's Hein's birthday, no, so let's just
Captain Barrett's never allowed to listen to the show again. I'm so sorry. Not allowed. Out.
I'm defiantly wishing you, Captain Barrett and Hein, a happy time.
What a name for a girlfriend, Hein.
Hey, what's wrong with that?
She's probably lovely. She might not even be a girlfriend, and he's probably lovely. Who cares? It's Hein's birthday. We love you and your name, Hein. It's just Garrett that's a dick. The rest of us are nice.
It's headline time, so let's look at what's going on. This is a big story. The South African Health Products Regulatory Authority and various parties fighting for the use of ivermectin have reached a settlement agreement for the compounding of and access to the drug. This has been a very controversial thing. Apparently, government decided at some point, no, we don't want people to have ivermectin, even though ivermectin has been shown to have some very positive effects for people who are fighting COVID.
What is?
Ivermectin. Good.
So there's a thing that's good for helping people suffering with COVID, and the government do or don't want it to be allowed in South Africa.
So they tried to ban it. Registered medical practitioners who are entitled to prescribe medicines in Schedule 3 of the Act may, by their personal and professional discretion, prescribe ivermectin. They were not allowed to do this until now. If they were doing so, they were doing so illegally up to now. And many people were being supplied ivermectin by doctors that they knew, but it actually wasn't allowed because the government decided no. So luckily, they decided they took them.
Government says no.
Yeah, so they took them to court, and now ivermectin can be prescribed, and it's up to your health practitioner to decide whether or not they think it
was there like an ostensible reason why the government didn't want it? I mean, are they unable to get a middleman into the import, or is it supposed to have a risk? I mean, what was the theoretical problem?
So the SAHPRA, S-A-H-P-R-A, which is the South African Health Practitioners, whatever it is, Health Products Regulatory Authority, that's what it is, SAHPRA. They decided no, and they've actually been ordered to pay R1 million to contribute to the costs of the four applicant groups who took them to court. And those four applicant groups are the kind of people who really do care about your rights, not the government. And I think that it's worth giving them some credit too. AfriForum among them, and other parties who are lobbying for the use of ivermectin. So now you can use the stuff and your doctor can prescribe it to you. It's about time. The fact that this even had to go to court. Every time you want government to do the right thing in this country, you have to take them to court to do it. They just cannot do the right thing on their own. Dummies. There are other stories that we need to pay attention to this morning. Among them, a double murder-accused businessman is back in court. Ramiz Patel is his name. He's in the Polokwane High Court for allegedly killing his wife. He was cross-examined about the clothes he was wearing on the day his wife was murdered. He's out on R250,000 in bail. And if you want to see what he looks like, he's the kind of guy who grimaces at the camera, so he's not helping himself here. If you see a picture of him, you'll see what I mean. He looks like the kind of dude who is not keen to give the best impression. I'll show you what I mean. Let me find you this picture of him quickly, and then you can get an idea. Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes when I do voiceovers, I'm not keen to give the best impression either, but I just soldier through it. It's my job.
That's mightily brave of you. Here's the guy, Ramiz Patel. That's him.
I refuse to engage in calling and saying that someone looks murdery. He just looks like he's pissed off at having a really crap day and that he might have gone to Opikopi this weekend.
No, he looks murdery. I'm going to say that. I'm going to say straight up.
He looks hungover and pissed off-y.
No, murdery. See, you reckon he looks
murdery? Give him a face mask and a haircut. Maybe we might talk.
He just looks pissed off and he's maybe on trial for murder. I'm not saying he did or didn't do it. This doesn't reflect either opinion or whatever. You just can't say an oak that's clearly going through murder court. It looks like it's a bright sunny day and he doesn't have sunglasses. Looks murdery because he's not enjoying the murder process.
I see this guy murdery. Sorry. That's what I see.
What if someone didn't know about this and then they just saw their cousin pop up in that photo? It's like, what?
Yeah.
Well, my cousin did what?
Dodgy. That's all I'm going to say. Then in other news, Amazon's Jeff Bezos, this is quite a big story, has backed a tax rise on companies. Well, it's easy when you have many hundreds of billions of dollars to say, let's put up the taxes. But you know that the taxes, they hit people very, very hard, especially in the middle. You know, if you're super rich like him, what do you care if they tax you at even 70%? Because you've earned so much and you've got a company that's so valuable that you really, it doesn't matter to you. He says that the corporate tax rate should go up from 21% in America to 28%. Now, I mean, we have taxes in this country that make that look favorable, you know. I mean, the mm-hmm. personal income tax in South Africa is north of 45%. So I'm never in favor of tax. If people who like taxes tend to forget that governments don't make that money. They don't create the value. They just glom on like a tick, and then they suck that value out of whoever is creating it. And it is theft. It is theft by government sanction. That's all it is. If anyone else walked into your business and said you have to give me half your money, you'd shoot them.
But, or you'd say, what do I get in return for that? Correct. Like some electricity, maybe, the odd road.
But government do that, and people go, oh, no, it's very important that people pay their taxes. No, it isn't.
It's a big sort of political fulcrum in America. And I watched firstly, I know that things like John Oliver and Stephen Colbert are as left biased as a lot of your Fox News and stuff is right biased. Sure. It's not a balanced opinion. They're very pro-Democrat. But they were explaining national debt and national deficit, which the Republicans who've always famously driven sky high during their administrations are now using the national debt as a way to try and make the Democrats look shit. But like how national debt can be good and how America owe more money to Japan, and there's this narrative that they owe China a lot of money, and they do owe China a lot of money, but it's not a significant portion compared to the rest. Just fascinating how like the argument is whether without debt you can't build future infrastructure, or whether having debt means the economy is in bad health. Even the idea of debt is in debate as to whether it's good or bad for a country to have.
Yeah, I don't even want to go down that road. All I'm saying is if you've earned money, I don't think it's right that a bandit comes in and takes half your money at gunpoint.
Yeah, it's like you have to pay rent to live in the country you're from, and then they don't deliver any of the things they're supposed to deliver. Not like few of the things, virtually none.
Morally, it's just wrong. And, you know, the people always talk about that companies or that individuals who've made lots of money must pay their fair share, including Elizabeth Warren. She talks about your fair share. She's a senator in America who's been complaining. Listen to her.
So we've got a lot of work to do to fix the international tax system, and I'm looking forward to working with my colleagues here to do that. A good place to start is to be clear about the extent to which giant corporations are already manipulating the tax code.
Now, she talks about giant corporations manipulating the tax code, and she worries that these giant corporations aren't paying their fair share. Just bear in mind that those big companies and the people who run them are paying more than their fair share. In fact, those people are probably bankrolling 70 to 80% of federal expenses that they pay for through their taxes. So what is a fair share? Because if it's fair, if we're all equal, then everybody should be taxed at the same rate. But that's not how it works. People who make more money get taxed more. That's just how it is. And not just pro rata. They actually get taxed more. There are special categories of tax that start to kick in the more money you earn. So when is it going to be fair? I mean, when does it...
I've had the one where you get an increase and you get incremental increases, and then you get excited, and then you realize you're earning less the next month as a result because you've just crept into another tax bracket.
Correct.
And the increase doesn't cover the increased percentage in tax. I have literally had to decline an increase before in order to just remain earning the same amount of money and not get less.
Absolutely. Now, don't tell me that that's a good thing. Let's not pretend, everybody, please, once you're paying someone more because they're doing more work and they've got more value to your company, that now suddenly that means government can nail them harder. I think that's horrific. I think that's absolutely criminal. But you know what? Because it's the law, they can get away with it. Government have a monopoly on violence. That's what it is.
A lot of people sort of live more or less in one. When I say live in, I don't mean they're stuck there forever, but they spend long periods being used to one tax bracket, and then if it changes, it's like a milestone in life.
Yeah.
But mine changes because I contract and freelance, and some years are a lot better than others. 2018 was a lot better than 2020 financially, and when you see yourself actually going to a higher bracket that you weren't in 2 months ago, you feel it. It's painful.
This is interesting. Environmental Affairs MEC in the Western Cape said some of the main problems that came with the winter season include flooding and fires in informal settlements, and they're gearing up for that in the Western Cape. They are worried about a very cold and wet winter season. Disaster Management Center is putting contingency measures in place to ensure public safety. It includes an agreement with the South African Defense Force to use its helicopters for rescue operations. So they are putting all the plans into action to make sure that the Western Cape is safe this winter, because it's not a great time there in terms of disasters that occur because of fires and flooding. So look out if you're in the Western Cape. The government there are trying to think ahead instead of just react to what goes on.
But now, like, you've got COVID, people have lost jobs, things were dire to begin with, and now they're expecting not just floods and fires, but worse ones than usual. Mm-hmm. And Cape Town, they have both of those regularly, and they're very serious.
Yeah, no, it's horrible.
There's just going to be more suffering for people.
A key witness in the trial of George Floyd's murderer, Derek Chauvin, or killer, sought Tuesday to avoid giving evidence, as his lawyers said he could incriminate himself on separate charges. Maurice Hall, that's a hell of a name, who was with Floyd in his car shortly before his death, is in custody, appeared by video camera at the hearing after he was subpoenaed to testify. There's a very small, narrow topic that might be permissible, the judge said, as Hall's lawyers argued that it was impossible for him to be cross-examined without incriminating himself. So, George
Can't
Floyd...
Can't you get some sort of immunity in exchange for your trial? Your testimony, excuse me?
Well, I don't know that that's valuable at this point. Listen, they're going to have a very tough time convicting this guy of murder, because murder, the standard is reasonable doubt. And if you have any reasonable doubt at all, remember, this guy, George Floyd, had like enough fentanyl in him that could kill a horse. And they're saying that whether or not Derek Chauvin had put his knee on the neck of George Floyd, it wouldn't have made any difference. George Floyd was going to die anyway. And there's video of him in a shop before that where he's looking really, really high and jittery and jumpy. Now this friend of his, who might have been a useful witness, can't testify because he'll incriminate himself. So it's looking increasingly like this is not going to go the way that so many people in America want it to go. But here's what will happen. If George Floyd, his killer, Derek Chauvin, if Derek Chauvin is found guilty of murder, then people will say, you see, there is this is racism in America. If he's found not guilty of murder, people will go, you see, this is evidence of racism in America. So, again, if you want your narrative to triumph, you'll find a way of making it happen. People like to be right, as Gord always says.
Yeah, I don't know enough to have any real input on that, except to say it is always at its heart going to be, to an extent, not to an extent, it's a murder issue, it's about humans, but it's a race thing. So whatever outcome,
that's it.
Some race angle is going to benefit and another race angle is going to suffer.
Yeah.
So it's a racially sensitive thing. It's going raceward, whatever happens.
No, absolutely. And then this seems to be the whole
going
point.
Going where?
Raceward.
Raceward. It's headed towards race vibes, regardless of the outcome.
That's Gord's new word for the day. All right. I want to turn our attention quickly to Sean. Sean Saunders, someone who...
Oh, so do I. Hi, Sean.
Good morning, guys. How are you all doing?
That's good.
I just feel like that was a scary intro there. Like, yeah. Hi, Sean. How are you?
Yeah. No, no, that's Gord. It's about as scary as it gets.
Guys, how are you all doing? Like, I think I actually don't ever ask you how you doing. I'm always asking me how we doing at Revix and how the crypto market's doing and all the rest.
No,
how are you doing?
We're fine. Don't worry. If we're here every morning, things are fine. The day that we're not here, then
You know the crypto guys are having a good time of things at the moment where they're like, how are you dudes doing? Morning, guys. Like, never mind the crypto report. Give us your report.
Yeah. So, Sean, let's do what we do at the beginning of all of these, just give people a price on Bitcoin, $57,584. And nice, Ethereum is up at $2,093, according to my ticker. So that looks pretty damn good. So what is happening in the world of crypto? Well, to fill us in is none other than Sean Saunders, co-founder of Revix, and we're going to talk about the cryptocurrency market. Apparently, it broke above $2 trillion, making it more valuable than Apple, the company. So all those people who've always said, I'm not going to invest my money in crypto because companies are where the value is made. Yeah, sure. Show me a company that's gone up by the percentage points that that Bitcoin and Ethereum and Cardano and all the rest of them have done in the last while. That's a hell of a thing to break through the $2 trillion mark, right?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, this, I think it's a difficult sort of concept for people to understand, crypto, right? Blockchain, it's like a load of jargon. And it's kind of like when we entered the internet period. I mean, I was super young. Most of us are actually pretty young. But when you enter the really early days of the internet, I mean, 70s, yeah. 80s, even like, you know, late 90s, it was weird. I mean, you didn't have actual user interfaces until the 80s. I mean, that's kind of crazy, right? Like everything was done through some sort of code. And I think the crypto market and the blockchain market, when I say blockchain market, I'm really referring to sort of the decentralized finance space, everything that's going on in the background. I mean, it is like weird. It's wonderful. It's like crazy. People don't quite understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what people need to look at when they're looking at the crypto market, I mean, sure, it's gone up a lot, right? But if you look at any successful investment that's ever occurred, whether that be the likes of Amazon, Naspers, Apple, that go through the list, at sure. some point in time, you know, it's gone through a significant growth. It's increased a lot in value and people are going, well, is this in a bubble? And then you look out 2 years from now and then you're still going, well, is this in a bubble? And it just continues, you know, increasing over time. Personally, and again, there's so many opinions in the world of crypto and I guess some are right, some are wrong at different times. Mm-hmm. But I do think that you will see Bitcoin, just looking at Bitcoin alone, increase in value and become more than gold. And if you then fast forward in 5 or 10 years time, the tables are going to be flipped and you're going to essentially be looking at Bitcoin making up 10% of gold's market value. Gold making up 10% of Bitcoin's market value. And that's currently the other way around today.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really the big opportunity, is looking forward and saying, well, is the future going to be more digital? Yes. Do you think that we are going to have the currencies that we have today? I don't think so. I think it's a little weird, right? I mean, I always have to look at these sort of weird things we have in society where you, like, you know, you sign a document, you squiggle on a piece of paper, now yeah. you've authorized a document. You used to put a stamp on a letter, I suppose you still right. put stamps on a letter.
I mean, we were talking this morning about if you were in a car accident, you'd have to fill in an affidavit and go to the police station and have them stamp it and all that stuff. I mean, there's going to be a way in the future that the blockchain can hold all of that stuff and that will be irrefutable. It'll make it, you know, on the ledger, there'll be this entry and everyone can check it and it'll be unfalsifiable, effectively. That's one of the applications that I think people are probably underestimating, because there's so much that we can do in terms of the applications of blockchain technology, and particularly because Ethereum will be the backbone for so much of that, that will improve our lives, and we won't even realize until we're there, except the people who started early, which is where you come in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really the big opportunity here, right? I mean, when you saw the internet coming about, not everyone wanted to run out there and go, well, let's, you know, start an internet business or let's, yeah. you know, do something in the internet space. And now the internet's part of everything that we do. We can't imagine a society without it.
But
and I think in the not too distant future, you're going to be looking wistfully off into the distance and thinking back to the days when it was normal to hand out paper money with kings and presidents and all these weird animals that we have printed on them. I think that's kind of crazy. I mean, mm-hmm. I even think the idea and this won't even be that far in the future, maybe 10 or 15 years, the idea of actually driving, having a human behind a wheel will seem completely obscene and crazy.
And it'll be,
and I think that's
even,
the future we're heading into, right?
It'll be even
so,
more bizarre.
I think we need to get ready for that.
It'll be even weirder if people still have to go to ATMs in even 5 years from now, which we know are not just a locus for crime, but it's an unnecessary thing to do. You can now send people money
and unhygienic as hell under the present conditions. I mean, you got to go and it's like a device. It's out in the open, facing the road, like anyone can use it, and it's like you have to touch it all over the place in the same exact place that other people just had to touch it. And there's no, like, obviously they can't put a dispenser of sanitizer on it because it's facing the road. It would disappear in 10 minutes. It's like you have to go lick a window to get cash now.
So, Sean, let's just talk about this bubble, because people are saying, you know, the negative people, and we'll get to the positive ones in a second, but there are a lot of people who are nervous, and they're saying, oh, you know, this Bitcoin bubble has to burst at some point because it's up over 700% since last year. But you know, what do you make of people who have that claim and say that you should be very careful, this thing's going to blow up, and then you've put a huge amount of your money into it, be very nervous about this, Bitcoin is just a fad. What do you say to those people? Because you must meet them occasionally.
Occasionally, oh yeah, no, often, right? I mean, everyone was a skeptic until they became a convert, right? And I think if you're looking at, again, any asset, right, it doesn't just increase in a straight line. It's kind of, you know, if you look at actually Bitcoin's price chart, there's a really interesting chart out there that sort of shows the 2017 bubble, and then goes to the 2015 bubble, goes to the 2012 bubble. Mm. And there's all these sort of periods in Bitcoin's history. I mean, every asset's very similar. I mean, it's certainly every crypto asset. You've got periods, and there's sort of like the 80-20 principle that comes into this as well. You've got very short periods of time where you get a lot of the return, and then the rest of the time it's sort of just jumping up and down and not really making the big gains. And I think it's really a case of stop looking back. I think that's the most like important bit of information or education I can provide anyone. If you're looking at a stock's performance, you'll never look at its last 12 months' performance. That doesn't matter, right? I think a lot of people, certainly retail investors or rookie investors, look back at the last 12 months, 24 months, 5 years, and they go, oh, this is up 3,000%. It surely can't go up more. I mean, if you applied that logic to any really successful investment, you're going to be kicking yourself when it goes up another 1,000%. I had, you know, I've said this on the show before, in 2017, I was like, I missed the boat. I was like, oh my word, can't believe I missed out on this crypto thing. In 2015, late 2015, I was saying exactly the same thing. And I'm not saying that again now.
Do you feel that way?
I don't think you should feel that way now, personally. I think I
got into it now, the chance is gone.
I think the easy money
is gone. Sell me on not believing that anymore, Sean.
So if you're looking at, let's just look at Bitcoin alone. I mean, Ethereum's up, I think, got a far bigger upside. And I mean, the rest of the crypto market has a far bigger upside. But if you're looking at Bitcoin currently being about 10% of gold's total value, if that changes, right? And remember, there's currently a big rotation happening where money's moving out of gold and moving into Bitcoin. And a lot of new institutional investors are entering the crypto space, and their sort of gateway drug is Bitcoin. Later on, that may then filter down to the likes of Ethereum, Ripple, and all the rest. But I think if you're looking at that opportunity and saying, well, Bitcoin's going to act as a store of value, it's going to act as a sort of store of account, very similar to the way gold is acting at this point in time. And those tables switch. And it's not to say that gold's value just declines, but it's to say that Bitcoin actually becomes a better store of value. And in many ways, I think it is better. And if that happens, you're looking at, you know, from where we are today, a good 20 to 30x return. And I think that's really the big opportunity here. Again, you know, you're not looking, when you enter the crypto space, because it is such a volatile and risky asset, you're not looking at making a 10 or 20% return. If you're trading at sure, go to the casino sort of thing. But with Revex, what we're really saying is look out 5 or 10 years' time. You've got an entire generation choosing to buy digital currencies and Bitcoin in particular over gold. I mean, gold, you know, it's interesting, but in many respects, it is a fairly boring asset. It's not really that useful. And now you've got this new digital payment system. You know, potentially a central bank could adopt this. You could have a Bitcoin ETF, which provides so much upside opportunity, right? You've got this entire market of individuals that are having to buy cryptocurrency through platforms like Revex, and through other cryptocurrency exchanges and all the rest. And in the future, there's going to be financial products that make access to Bitcoin really easy for the big players. Currently, that's still a difficult market. I mean, there's ways that you can get exposure, but that's a difficult market. And I think when that happens, as I mentioned, I mean, central banks can enter the space, and that really changes sort of the investment opportunity.
All right. I had an email from Chris, but we're not going to have time for this now. We'll have to talk about it when we see you next time. Chris says, please ask Sean a question regarding Revex. When will they bring in a method to make withdrawal from abroad easier? The only current option is via a Bitcoin withdrawal, and the gas fees are high. So he wants to know about how that works. So we'll let you think about that for a few days, and we could talk about it when we next when we next see you. But for now, I'm afraid we're out of time. All right, Sean, thanks so much, Steve.
Well,
as always, interesting stuff. What do you want to say, Gordo?
Just that Jerry Good has said that he's got 50K laying in his account. He wants Sean to sort him out with a solid Bitcoin plan for guidance. I don't have 50K lying around, but I also want that plan. So where can we continue to follow up with Sean once he buggers off now and leaves us all unattractive on our own?
You can go to Revex. You can go to Revex.com, sign up for free. You can verify your ID. You can add funds and select the bundle of your choice. And there are people there who will help answer all of your questions. Just go to Revex.com for further information. That's the best way to do
Dunzos.
It. Thank you, Sean. Cheers, man. Awesome. All righty.
Ford, I have to say I'm very proud of you,
Ford. Just as soon as he came into our lives, he's gone again. Sean, he's always, it's just, you need 5 more minutes of Sean.
I think we need to.
I'm very proud of you, Ford. There was a sitting duck of a joke that was right in front of you and you didn't go towards it.
What was that?
That ATM reference, yep. ATM, something facing the street, waiting to be yep. touched, but you didn't go there.
I didn't, because I don't want to embarrass myself in front of Sean. I get nervous. And also because, you know, we're talking business and stuff, and I don't know yes. the inner workings of the business, but he might have just paid to do that. I don't know how it all works with sponsorships and stuff. So whenever there's an external person, I just hold my tongue.
Good for you. Yeah. Well done. That's called good judgment. All right. It is a Wednesday morning. It is the 7th of April. CliffCentral.com. Stick around. We've got lots more for you in the next hour. CliffCentral.com.